You're listening to Trek FM.
There was a little bar in Mill Valley where all the Starfleet trainees used to go.
The 602 Club.
You know it.
I was there more times than I can remember.
Welcome, everyone, to Trek FM's local watering hole. Hosts from the network and me, usually, as well as the friends dropping by, and we just talk all things geeky, of course. Already ordered my drink from Ruby, so make sure you grab your chair with me today. I'm really excited. Back is Andy. Andy, it's great to have you back in the 602. How's it going?
It's good. I'm excited that we get to talk about the second half of Doctor Who, because we got a chance to dig into the first half of Doctor Who, and that was really fun, so I feel like we're coming full circle here.
It really was a great time with you and me and Norm. Norm couldn't be here this week, and he's settling in with his hosting duties over there at Warp 5, and so it's been really busy for him. And
well, he's in our hearts. That's what matters.
Yes, that's right. It is. Unfortunately, we can't do any time traveling as we'd like to make things work out. But
where's the doctor when we need him?
Exactly. Seriously, why don't we have a TARDIS? Cool thing, this is the first show back for the new year, so I'm excited because, you know, every year Doctor Who has become a staple for me now, and of course last year, very big Christmas episode because it was Matt Smith's goodbye, and I really wanted that one to be good, and on a whole, I found it just to be a pretty disappointing episode. So it got me thinking just about that. You know, what are some of your favorite Christmas Doctor Who episodes?
Oh, definitely my favorite one is A Christmas Carol. And I don't know how much of that is the episode itself, although I think it's a really fun one. Anytime you have space sharks, right? I'm down with space sharks. It just is a good example of when Moffat actually does things really well, which is come up with this like surreal idea and then actually make it work. And then having such a surreal idea, like this idea of a planet with sharks in the air and, you know, all of this extra special timey-wimey stuff, but then grounded in real emotion. So I really enjoy that one, but also just in general, it's a really nostalgic one for me personally because this was the first of Doctor Who Day for me and my family. I was the first person in my family to really get into Doctor Who, but I was not the last. I slowly infiltrated the rest of my family until all of the little cousins were really obsessed with it, and finally their parents got into it. And this was the first year that we all sat down and watched the Christmas special together. And I mean, all of us. And this was the last Christmas we had with my grandma. So, just having the entire family, like every generation, cuddled up on this huge couch my cousin has and watching Doctor Who together. It was like highlight of my life, to be honest. It was so much fun. And
that's awesome.
A really cool way to bond with my family. So since then, we have continued that tradition. So every year now, we go to my cousin's house and watch the Christmas special all together. And since I no longer live in the same town as my family, it's a really nice way to get to see them and have a lot of fun with them once a year.
Yeah, I don't have any memories like that because for me, last year was my very first Doctor Who Christmas special to watch. It was fun though because I had some friends come over that were big Doctor Who fans, and we all got together, you know, Christmas Day. And that evening after we were done with, you know, hanging out with our families and stuff and, you know, just all sat around and watched the episode. And, you know, whether it was great or anything, it was sad just because I had grown accustomed to Matt at that point. And just seeing him go was hard, as it is for every doctor that leaves, you know, from watching it from Chris all the way now. Every time they left, I was like, I always just wanted them to be around more. And You know, Matt had really grown into that role. I didn't feel like they serviced him as well in the last season that he had. I just don't think they gave him the best material that they could have, and that was sad. But he, you know, he played the role with the same amount of just passion and ease that he did, you know, when he first came in, and so that was really fun. I really enjoyed. Just like you said, you get around with people that you love and care about, and Doctor Who just kind of brings together, whether the episode's great or not, it doesn't really matter, because it just is, it's now kind of part of our lives, and
yeah, our it helps Christmas bring tradition. Us closer.
Yeah, it's so much fun. So, well, this one, just what were your first impressions for this year's Christmas special, last Christmas?
You know, I think it was a pretty good. It matched the tone of season 8. I think it was pretty melancholy. It was a little bit bleak, but there was, you know, some hope involved. But for the most part, it was a kind of dark episode in spots, which I think kind of matches this whole season with Capaldi has been a lot more serious and a little bit you know, not as uplifting as one might hope, but at the same time I kind of like that. I like that they're kind of digging deeper into the dark side of what it's like to go on these adventures and encounter these sorts of things, and then bringing Danny back and having Clara actually deal with a death. It's pretty rare that we get to see that. Most of the time these days, you know, somebody dies and then the show goes on, and you never see characters really processing it very well. So having a whole segment of the episode dedicated to reminding us that Clara has just suffered a very significant loss that she's still really dealing with, I thought that was nice. Just in general, I think at this point, Peter Capaldi has really kind of hit his stride as the Doctor, so that makes a lot of it work. I don't know how much I enjoyed the aliens. Thought they were a little bit silly. And a kind of the idea of, are they awake? I mean, the first three times, okay. But, like, by the time they've woken up for, what, the fifth or sixth time, I'm like, okay. At some point, they actually have to be conscious in this episode. But overall, I liked it. I think it was stronger than some of the specials we've had lately, especially. Because some of the Christmas specials are pretty up and down, and the last couple, I don't think, have been very strong. I think this one was at least stronger than those.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I liked about this is that it definitely felt better than the last two Christmas specials, for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, we both really enjoyed Christmas Carol and think that that's probably the pinnacle right now of Christmas specials that they've done, you know, in the last, what is it, 8 years now. So what was great about this season, I think, and this Christmas special is that, like you said, it played into the feeling of the season, while at the same time, I think, giving you a little bit of an upswing. You know, like, by the end of the episode, I felt like there's a little bit more of that whimsy mm-hmm. that we had come to expect from Doctor Who, you know, especially in the Matt years.
Yeah.
And it felt like, to me, though, maybe like an end of a David Tennant episode, which I thought was great. You know, I was glad to kind of see that vibe back and get, you know, Capaldi having just kind of joy as the Doctor, you know, when he's flying the sleigh and all of those things, I thought was really great, because you know, at the beginning of the year, we would have never seen Capaldi's Doctor do anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that there can be a season ender that is more depressing than the end of season 8.
Yeah.
So it was nice to at least, you know, not leave that hanging. You know, they came back to that. They addressed the fact that both Claire and the Doctor had left each other dishonestly and both in really low points. And they just left. I mean, I don't think I've seen an ending that sad for Doctor Who in a long time. Even when some of the tragic things have happened in seasons past, they usually give us something to hold on to by the end, but this one was really particularly harsh. So I like that they at least address that and let them go out together on a much better note. You know, the end of the episode, they're both, you know, ready to go travel in time and space again and ready to tackle the world again, whereas at the end of season 8, they're both very defeated. So that's a nice way to kind of... I consider this the end of the season, to be honest. So it's nice to end the season with them both in a much better place.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I really felt was that whole idea of the thread of this season has been kind of lying, you know, like the way that Clara had lied to Danny for most of the season and lied to the doctor for a lot of the season, the way the doctor had kept her in the dark about some things, you know, all of this and just how that idea, you know, when we lie to others, especially those closest to us, it really usually just creates this distance. And, you know, in the end, it's that distance usually when we need those people the most. And how that hurts. And I thought that was really interesting that this episode really is a culmination of that in the biggest way. Because by the end of the episode, it's the doctor and Clara realizing how much they need each other in their lives.
Yeah, I mean...
As people, you know?
Yeah, lying has been a big theme for this season just in general. I mean, they make several instances of Clara saying she's a great liar, other people saying she's a great liar, and just how she falls back on lying quite often throughout the season, both with her relationship with Danny and then later on with the doctor. And it seems to be a kind of a way to protect herself. Often people say that they're lying to protect other people, but I find that to be rarely the case. Usually that's to protect themselves, and they justify it by saying they're protecting someone else. And so that was obviously a big strain on her and Danny's relationship throughout, is her not being able to be upfront and honest with him about what she wants out of her life and what she wants out of their relationship and what she wants to do, you know, with the doctor. I mean, lying about traveling with the doctor is a pretty big lie. I don't see how you're going to have a particularly strong romantic relationship if you can't be honest about how you're spending your days, I guess. So, I mean, yeah, just in general, lying has definitely been one of the big season themes. So it's kind of interesting to have it wrapped up with them finally being honest with each other and letting that take their relationship forward.
Well, and... One of the coolest things about this episode, I thought, was just kind of the amalgamation of different movies that they were kind of slamming together, you know, Inception meets Alien, mm-hmm. meets kind of It's a Wonderful Life, and to create the story, which that part I thought was kind of fun, especially just the whole, when the doctor says, "You have a movie called Alien?"
Yeah.
That's no wonder offensive. People keep invading you. That's so racist, you know? I just thought that was really fantastic. That, you know, this whole idea, the things that are in our psyche and our pop culture kind of really come to play in this episode, you know? Like the idea of Inception and just this alien taking over and this whole kind of It's a Wonderful Life for the doctor. And I think... What made this successful for me, more so than some of the other episodes that they've done for Christmas, is that it was riffing off of a really famous, you know, Christmas movie in the same way that, the episode of Christmas Carol did.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the point of the Christmas special has always seemed to me is to take something Christmassy, some sort of Christmas touchstone, and then add a sci-fi element to it that makes it fantastical, and then put the doctor right in the middle of it all. I mean, in Christmas Invasion, you have, you know, the Christmas trees, turning into weapons and, you know, the scary Santas and all of this sort of thing. And then you have, obviously, A Christmas Carol based on one of our most famous Christmas stories. And then the one that, oh, what's it called? The Doctor, the Widow, and the Wardrobe.
Yep, yep.
I mean, even that, even though it's not technically a Christmas story, the idea of, like, this snow land is... It's just this idea of, like, tweaking our favorite Christmas traditions and stories and making them fantastic, I guess. So that's always good. This one, I don't know if I felt like the Christmas elements worked so well. I mean, kind of shoehorning Santa in there a little bit. I mean, if you think about it, there is, like, no reason at all for there to be any presence of Santa, except for they wanted it to have a Christmas theme. Which, speaking of, how did you think Nick Frost did as Santa? I would not have thought to cast Nick Frost as Santa, but they did.
I've got three little words for you. My Little Pony. I thought that he was really, really funny as Santa. You know, I was listening to another podcast today, and they were talking about this, and it brought something to mind. You know, the whole fantastical idea of Santa seems ridiculous, and it plays kind of ridiculously at the beginning. You're like, what? But the way that they kind of rationalize it into the story, I felt like was smarter than I would have, you know, figured out at the beginning. You know, the idea that... Santa is the rational part of their brains that's trying to tell them that, you know, you need to get out. And because it was Christmas time in the setting for, you know, Clara and the rest of those people, it kind of made sense to have him there. But, you know, Nick Frost doing just about anything is great. And him as Santa, I just thought was hysterical. I mean, my wife and I just laughed a lot with him. And, you know, with the Christmas special, that's kind of what I want to do. I would just want it to be fun, and I want to laugh at it. And so I appreciated all that silliness. You know, I'm not trying to really pick these apart and expect it to be the, you know, the best, grandest story. I just really kind of want it to be a fun episode. And I thought he really added such levity to some of the darkness that we saw in the episode that it was really great to have him there. You needed that kind of comedic person who could really play off of everybody in that way. And especially the way that Nick Frost really does with the snarkiness that he's so good at. Mm-hmm. So I felt like he really brought it. What did you think?
I liked him. The thing I liked most about it is the idea of putting the legend of Santa next to the legend of the Doctor and portraying them as equally ridiculous if you actually think about that. The Doctor keeps saying, well, it's Santa. I mean, it can't be Santa. But, I mean, Doctor, you... travel through time and space in a telephone box and, you know, save people from aliens. I mean, that's just as out there as the idea of Santa. And I really liked that they kind of paralleled that idea. So in that case, I enjoyed it. And I do agree that Nick Frost is pretty much always fun to watch. So I just thought it was really funny because it took me a moment to figure out that it was Nick Frost. They did a good job of making him look like Santa, at least.
Yeah. He's like, what gave it away? And the elves are like, well, maybe it's that big beard you grew in, that red suit you decided you needed to wear today. And that brought up a really interesting question for me because, you know, Clara says something to Santa and, like, the dream is going to save us. And he says, maybe that's the very definition of Santa.
Yeah.
Of a dream that's trying to save us. So, you know, really kind of a metaphysical question, I think, because it felt like it was saying something beyond the show. You know, obviously, in the show, yes, Santa is the person that's trying to save them. But what else, I mean, did you read into that? Because I felt like that line was meant to just kind of have the watcher read whatever they wanted to into that.
I like that idea because it kind of ties into some of the more adult ideas of Santa. You know, I remember when I was right in the mid of my childhood, you know, just after you've realized Santa isn't real, but, you know, you start to feel superior, like, Santa's not real, and all the adults will say, no, Santa is real, he's the spirit of Christmas. You know, like, this kind of idea that Santa is a cultural idea at this point that represents something, basically a set of Christmas ideals, and then translating that into an episode of Doctor Who as, yeah, Santa is not physically real, but he's real, you know, he's a real idea that we all believe in, kind of thing, which I think is a pretty common way to think about Santa in a modern world as an adult. I actually found out Santa wasn't real very young, so I felt very, very cool when all my friends were talking about Santa, and I knew. Oh, I knew how silly and young they were. I was much more mature than that.
Well, I never believed in Santa.
Oh, no.
I always knew he wasn't real, but we still played like he was at home, and that was fun. I mean, we knew he wasn't real, and it, you know, didn't bother us, you know, but we still got presents from Santa, you know, quote unquote.
I mean, as long as the presents keep coming, right?
Yeah, you know, and that was
you don't question the source of the presents.
Exactly. But, you know, what was so interesting about it was, to me, you know, because I'm somebody of faith, it really resonated, though, with the whole idea of that, you know, we need a dream to save us. And we all have this desire and knowledge in some ways that I feel like that we do need salvation from something, you know, and we just don't always know what it is or what the Savior is. And, you know, obviously at Christmas, there's a whole other side to Christmas than just Santa for a lot of people. And so I thought that was really interesting because to me, it was a very sly way of maybe alluding to the fact that there's a whole nother side to why we celebrate Christmas than just to give each other presents and all of those kind of things without actually having to say any of that, you know. And again, I think that's one of the things that made the line. It's completely just open to interpretation. And at the same time, it was like, wow, that's a really big metaphysical question to be asking in the middle of a, you know, seriously zany Doctor Who episode. So
well,
that's
isn't
really
that
cool.
The definition of any good Doctor Who episode?
Asking vague metaphysical questions
in the middle of zany sci-fi.
Exactly. So that's great. You know, I was really, really excited to see that. And then, of course, you have Nick Frost going, as the Doctor would say, oh, it's all a bit dreamy-weamy. Oh, gosh. So what did you kind of think? You know, we had that, you know, you kind of mentioned the dream monsters beforehand and how they bring everybody together. And what did you think about some of the other aspects of the episode, the way that it kind of all fit together? And then specifically, you know, I kind of feel like that this was a way of all kind of allowing Clara to come to a place where she could leave Danny to rest.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that that was basically the point, the emotional heart of the episode, I should say, which is good because she needed that. She needed that closure. She needed to move on while still honoring, you know, her loss. And death, just in general, has been a huge theme of the season. So, as I said, I really think this Christmas special, more than some other Christmas specials, really played into all of the things that we had gone through over the season. And from the very beginning, the idea of dying, basically, was a huge theme of the season. So her coming to terms with this death and grieving is a good emotional heart for this episode, I definitely think that. Also, one element I really did enjoy was I think we got some really cool one-off characters here. Sometimes, you know, we get these characters never to be seen again, and they don't really make a huge impression. But I did really enjoy some of the characters that we saw, especially, I think her name is Shona.
She was
great.
She started out fabulous, that
epic dance sequence. And just her,
with the fantastic bad British Christmas music.
Yes, awesome. just really an enjoyable character, and I actually would have liked to see more of her. I don't know. I thought she was really fun to watch, but she also had a lot of heart, I guess. Wouldn't
she make a great companion?
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't you think that I feel like that kind of character with the Doctor is someone we haven't seen before. I'd love to see that kind of the timing she had, and everything was so funny with Capaldi's Doctor.
Yeah, she really worked well with him. And then when she sits down and like is quizzing Santa, she's like, but how this and how that, and writing it all down and thinking of all the questions to ask. I just thought she was a really fun character. And just in general, I think some of these other ones were good too. But she really stood out for me as a definite high point of the episode.
This was, I think, just a very solid episode of Doctor Who. And, you know, it's just full of great lines. Like the Doctor saying, you know what I hate about the obvious? Missing it. and just things like that. I thought this is where Moffat really shines, as he understands, I think, in a lot of ways, how to write comedy.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I think he did get right the relationship between Clara and Danny, and then the Doctor there, and finding a way to really redeem that relationship between the Doctor and Clara, because it had been kind of broken. And, you know, especially by the end of the episode, I really liked that they did the whole, you know, kind of It's a Wonderful Life thing, and that the whole Santa angle had more to it than just kind of the zaniness, that it felt like there was something more going on with all of this, like almost as if the universe was saying, It's a Wonderful Life, Doctor, you know, you need to remember what's great and not miss it in life, in the same way that, you know, George Bailey is missing it and he has to be reminded. And that whole scene where, you know, he comes back and Claire is old and he can't tell the difference, but they realize how much they miss each other. And then of course Santa shows up and says, how much do you miss it, Doctor? You know, I really liked that, because it brought, again, the heart of this whole thing, which has been, I think, really galvanizing the relationship between the Doctor and Clara. And at the same time, bringing home the theme of this season, which I think has been, let's make Clara a real person and not just a prop.
Well, they definitely did a much better job with her than they have in previous seasons.
Yeah, I feel like I actually enjoy watching Clara now. You know, whereas, you know, season 7, it was just like, I don't enjoy this at all. She's kind of like cardboard, and it's not even an exciting mystery, really.
Well, one of the most important things that they did is they gave her real definable flaws.
Yeah.
For instance, we talked about how she's a liar. I mean, that's just, can't deny that. And then just kind of her way of avoiding her problems. I don't know. It just makes a character much more relatable when you see their flaws. Nobody likes a perfect character. They're boring. And before, she was very much like, if they gave her flaws, they were these tiny little flaws that were actually intended to make her seem cuter rather than, you know, actually a flawed human being, which is what we want. we want people to feel real, and real people have flaws. So that was a very important thing that they did that made her immediately much more relatable and interesting is, you know, she messes up constantly, to be honest. And that makes her a much stronger character just in general.
I really think what Moffat did is that he looked back at kind of what had made Rose a successful character. It was the way that she was trying to juggle her life with, you know, Mickey and her mom with the doctor, and how it wasn't very successful in that. And they kind of did the same thing with, you know, Clara and Danny, except, you know, Danny wasn't somebody who wanted to be traveling with the doctor at all. You know, he wasn't into that. This the same way that, like, Mickey and, you know, Rosa's mom kind of got into that whole thing. And so I thought that was a really interesting way of again, they just made her a more grounded, real, human character.
Well, they gave her a life. Before, yeah, I don't exactly. even feel like we had a sense that she had a life outside of running around with the doctor. I mean,
yep.
I mean, I'm sure that I know that they did allude to, like, jobs that she had and stuff like that, but really she felt like she appeared in the TARDIS and then they went on adventures and she was whoever she needed to be for that episode, and then, oh, she was back the next time. Whereas this time, the whole season goes back and forth between her life and her traveling, which,
yeah,
I mean, that's a huge difference from seasons past.
Definitely. Well, kind of going off of that, you know, we've finished, you know, season 8, and I think when we had recorded, we had probably gotten to, you know, maybe Kill the Moon.
We got to Mummy on the Orient Express.
Mm-hmm. So we, you know, we have seen the end of the season now. So on a whole, you know, just what did you end up thinking now that we've finished the entire season, Christmas special and all, Capaldi as the Doctor? I think that was a big question mark for a lot of Doctor Who fans coming in. I think we all had faith that he could do it. What do you think now that we're done with this season? And we know that he's coming back for season 9.
I'm on board with Capaldi. I think they stumbled a bit when they were trying to make him to be a little more harsh than the previous Doctors. And occasionally they did kind of walk that line and fall off it a couple times with making him too mean or too unfeeling. But by the end, I finally felt like they had found that perfect mix of kind of brusque but still caring. And I do love him as an actor just in general. I've always loved Peter Capaldi. I think he's amazing. He's a legendary actor in British everything for a reason. So I never doubted that he had the acting chops, and he certainly didn't disappoint. As for the season as a whole, I definitely liked the last couple episodes a lot more than I liked most of the beginning of the season. I thought they ended strong. I don't know. It's really up or down for me this season. There are a handful of episodes that I barely remember, that I would have to rewatch to really remember. There wasn't one episode that really stood out to me as, oh my goodness, I have to watch that episode again right now. And I've had that in almost every other season. There's just been one episode that I finished it and was like, I loved that episode so much, I want to rewatch it. And there wasn't one of those episodes. But overall, it was a much stronger season than last season was. So that's a big improvement. And I did enjoy the last couple episodes much more, so I think that's optimistic going forward.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because my wife had been catching up with Doctor Who, and we had gotten her to season 8, but we hadn't actually finished season 8, and that's why we didn't end up watching the Christmas special together at Christmas time, because she hadn't gotten there yet. And we had gotten to the time heist, and we hadn't watched that yet, so we, you know, we'd seen the first of the season, and it was great because last week, during the holidays again, we watched through the rest of the season together, and then we got to watch the Christmas special. And what was great is that I really found the season to be much stronger on my rewatch than I did the first time I saw it. And I think part of that is that, you know, in fan culture, we always come into something this big that we love with such high expectations and specific expectations in our own mind of what we really want to see. And I think Doctor Who really suffers from that because there's so many fans who've been watching it for so long and they have, you know, all of these ideas in their mind of what Doctor Who should be and what it, you know, what it should look like. And that can be really difficult when, you know, you watch an episode and it doesn't live up. And so for me, knowing what was coming then in the episodes was great because I could just kind of sit back and enjoy them for what they were, not
what you wanted them to be.
Just sitting on the edge of my chair like, oh, is this going to be a good one? You know, instead, I already knew it was coming, and then I could just sit back and enjoy all the jokes or anything like that. So some of the real highlights, I didn't really enjoy the season opener, but I really enjoyed Listen. I thought that was a fantastic episode, especially with the background for the doctor that we got, you know, seeing him in the barn, the same barn that we would see in the 50th anniversary, I thought was really spectacular. I really thought the robot of Sherwood was hysterical and very funny. I mean, it's a stupid episode, but I just really enjoyed that. Clara, I thought, really came into her own there. Kill the Moon, I thought, was pretty strong. I really enjoyed Mummy on the Orient Express a lot because, again, they really dove into what it means to be the doctor. And then, of course, the very next episode was the Flatline episode where Clara is the doctor, basically, the whole episode. And I thought that was a really strong episode. And then, actually, for me, you know, Dark Water and Death in Heaven, you know, Return of the Master, and she's a female master. I thought all that was great. I love seeing Kate Lethbridge-Stewart back, you know. I think she's fantastic. I think they should bring her back more. But that season finale kind of fell flat for me. I just was like, it's okay. It's not my strongest. But on a whole, as a season, like you said, it's definitely way stronger than season 7. I think at the end of the season with the Christmas episode, they had a very nice through line of we are going to make the character of Clara a real person, and at the same time, we are going to have this doctor who's lived for 2,000 years now really come to understand who he is again. And it was nice to see that kind of play out in the end. And so I thought that was really great. I think that, you know, if any Doctor Who fan out there is kind of on the fence about season 8, or, you know, you maybe only saw the episodes once, I'd say go back, rewatch the whole season again, because I think you might be surprised at some of the strengths you might have missed beforehand. And that's definitely not to take away from the fact that I don't think that, you know, some of those episodes, you know, they still, even if you rewatch them, they're not that great. Did you see this, Andy, though, that Doctor Who had its highest rated season ever?
I mean, I guess I'm not surprised by that. It has been growing in popularity basically worldwide for several years now. I feel like it has been going up for a long time, and it's nice to see that kind of culminate. Even the most normal of normal people in America now have at least some sense of Doctor Who. I was at dinner tonight and somebody made a TARDIS joke, and half the table laughed. I mean, even 2 years ago, that would never have happened. So I definitely think it's especially in America, really reaching a more broad audience than, you know, the kind of niche, kind of cult status that it had before. Really, in the last couple of years, especially since Matt Smith came on. So that's kind of pleasant to see. Just in general, I do agree very much that this was a much more consistent season with a much more clear understanding of what they're trying to say. I feel like the biggest problem with season 7 was it was so fragmented and you couldn't even really understand, like, what is the arc of this season? What are we saying? And it just definitely felt like a mixture of episodes rather than a season, if that makes sense. And season 8 had a very clear picture of what they were trying to say, I think. Basically, they were trying to answer the question of whether or not the Doctor is a good person, which he finally decides for himself at the end. You know,
he's an idiot.
Yes.
With exactly. A box. A blue box.
Exactly. And I like that. I like that the fact that they... I mean, they've kind of touched on this a handful of times, but this is the first season in which they basically went into the season going, let's examine the Doctor as a person, and is he a good person? Or maybe he's not. Maybe he's a bad person. I mean, sometimes he's ruthless, and sometimes he makes decisions that are totally alien to us as humans, and especially this Doctor definitely plays that ruthless side a lot more than other Doctors have. So it was a good theme and one that I think needed to be addressed, because there are some atrocities that he has experienced and perpetuated and been a part of. And I mean, a guy who's lived for that long is definitely going to have some dark spots, and we need to examine them. And, you know, they kind of line that up with Danny Pink as being a soldier with this huge regret that he has. And is Danny Pink a good person, even though he has done a terrible thing, or maybe more terrible things? So I really liked that as a theme, and I definitely think that they went after that with a much more clear focus than they have had in seasons past, and I'm very glad that they managed to get that back on track at least.
Yeah, I'm with you. I feel like that really did happen. Any final thoughts on maybe what you'd hope to see in season 9? Especially, would you like to see the Master return?
Or? We didn't get a chance to talk very much about the Mistress, but I think it's amazing that they decided to make her the Mistress. It's kind of a nod to, you know, when they were deciding who the new Doctor was going to be, there was a lot of people that are like, can we finally have a woman Doctor? And I remember all of these fanboys on the internet were like, no, I mean, that's not even possible. And I'm like, not only is it possible, they make it very explicitly stated that it's possible. And then now we have a Time Lord that switched genders very easily. It's kind of like, okay, we didn't give you a female Doctor, but here's a female Master. And then also having her friendship with the Doctor being kind of like the way that he finds his way back to who he is, I think that's a really cool idea. Like this person who has known him for so long, longer than anybody else, right when he's having this crisis of identity, am I a good man? And then having his oldest friend and one of his biggest enemies come back and help him clarify that. I think that's a really cool idea. And also, Michelle Gomez is amazing, and I love her. As soon as I saw that she was cast, I don't know that very many people in America know of this show, but she was one of my favorite actresses ever in a show called Green Wing, which is a really super surreal British comedy. It's kind of like Scrubs, if Scrubs was incredibly foul and bonkers. And she was one of the most bonkers characters on that, and she was brilliant. So I was really happy both with her performance and with the whole idea of the Master coming back and changing it around like that. So I would love to see her back. I would love that. And I think that she was really interesting and really arch and kind of a fun villain, and I really liked it. I would like to see that. I would like to see more of Capaldi finding his humanity, basically. I would like to see that theme continue. Do we know if Jenna Louise Coleman is coming back for the full season, or is she just doing a couple episodes, or has that been confirmed?
As far as we know, Clara is back for the season, so okay. Which I think is great, especially since, you know, who knows if, you know, Capaldi would be back for third season. So I would much rather see, you know, those two leave together, I think, at this point, because, I don't know, I feel like that's his companion.
Yeah.
And it fits very well with him. It'll be hard for him to... I don't know. It'd be it's always hard when the Doctor has to find a new companion. And to me, nobody was better than Rose with David, and I didn't think anybody was better with Matt than, obviously, Amy and Rory. And with Capaldi, I feel like Clara is such a great foil for him as a doctor. So I'll be interested to really see, you know, obviously what plays out with a season 10 and where they go with that. As you know, if Capaldi's back and Jenna decides that she doesn't want to stay, where they'll go and who they bring in. Shona, bring her back. That would be fantastic.
She can dance. Hey,
well, and we've seen that before, you know,
she can dance,
female character.
And we can have a whole new episode of The Doctor Dancing.
Yes, there we go. That, oh, gosh, what a great dance. So, oh, man. But yeah, I'd like to see the Master back. I felt like it, that the idea of bringing the Master and making it the Mistress and all of that was really fantastic. The actual, again, the execution of that whole, you know, two-episode arc wasn't my complete favorite, but I liked the elements of it there, and I thought that was great, and I would really like to see that play out more now, especially with the hunt for Gallifrey kind of being in the background always. So I think those two things are things could really play in and make for a very epic season, or as the British say, Series 9 Doctor Who. So, well, man, it has been so much fun talking about Doctor Who, the Christmas special, and what's coming next. But it's not the only thing that we've been talking about on Track FM this past week. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Because it's actually legitimately trying to say something.
Yes, it's very Star Trek. It may be the most Star Trek of all Star Trek.
Yeah, it's definitely what I would point to as being, this is what science fiction is about.
Earl Grey.
Kovac will tell us to experience Bij sometimes, in which case we will draw the Bij card, Klingon word for pain. So,
is
that
our birthday?
It is. It's going to be a lot of fun.
To the journey!
That's the one thing we could take from Homecoming is, like, paragraph one, Chakotay and Seven breakup. That's for real.
Yeah, they shake hands and go, hey, it's been fun. It's been nice. Thanks for the picnic.
See ya.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
At this point, like, they could say, yeah, why not? Star Wars crossover. I would essentially say, fine. Both franchises are dead. Let's just sew them together and see what happens.
Melodic Treks.
One of the most well-thought-out alien races that you only see in one episode.
Yeah, and the music is it's menacing without being over-menacing, if that makes sense.
Axanar, the official podcast.
I think Justin Lin is a fascinating choice to direct because the Fast and the Furious movies, even though, yeah, they're action, adventure, road race movies, are really about a family.
The 602 Club.
That's really cool, though. I mean, I think that is a fantastic way to get to see just about any movie is kind of being able to watch it through a kid's eyes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and find out what we've been talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. Of course, if you're an Apple user, be sure to hit that subscribe button. That really helps us out greatly, and it makes it easier for the other listeners to find us when they search in iTunes for shows. Also, you can give us a great star rating and review like JM Scott 11 did. He gave us a 5-star review, so I really want to say thank you to him. Fantastic written review as well. I really appreciate that because that also helps other listeners be able to find us as they search in iTunes. Of course, guys, if you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course, you can stream and download the MP3 from our website and grab the RSS link as well. Andy, I love having you on the show. It was so much fun to have you back talking about Doctor Who. Tell everybody where they can find you online.
Oh, well, the easiest way is on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @firsttimetrek. Where I am live tweeting my first time through Star Trek, and I am still stuck on season two of the original series, where I've been for months at this point. But I am hoping to do a good load of tweeting soon, so that's the best way to find me. I'm also at on Tumblr under the same name, First Time Trek, where you can see the beginnings of my archive project, where I'm trying to kind of put all my tweets in one place, so you can, if you've missed any of your favorite episodes, you can go back and take a look at my First Time Trek reactions to them.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here today.
No problem. It's always fun to come on the show.
Another way you can help us keep all of our shows coming to each week is become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you can find our current milestone contribution levels along with all the great perks that we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and more. Guys, we really appreciate any support that you can give us, because without you, we can't make this happen. And we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com. I really want to say a special thanks to our associate producer, Norman C. Lau, and his support of the network and the 602 Club. His Twitter account is @NormanLau. He's a big supporter of the Star Trek Axanar project and can be found on their official Facebook page as well as the Babel Conference. And last but not least, he's a huge supporter of our network on Patreon. And of course, he's now the host of Warp 5. If you'd like to contact us, you can do that at trekfm/contact. Just choose a show, write out something, and that'll come directly to us. You can leave us a voicemail. Just look in the sidebar on the show page or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. We're on Twitter at trekfm, Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And of course, we have the Babel Conference. That's our listeners-only discussion group there on Facebook. Just type the Babel Conference in the search field on Facebook, or just go to our website at trek.fm and click discussion on the menu bar. Before we go, I'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps bring the 602 Club and all of our shows to you each week. And our sponsor for the show is audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all those books that you've always wanted to, but of course with our busy schedules these days, it's just so hard to get in. And as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice with a 30-day trial just to see how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for their support of the 602 Club and the network. And of course, guys, you can find me at MattRushing02 on Twitter. You can also find me doing Literary Treks with Dan, where we talk about the books and comics of Star Trek. You can also find me doing The Orb with Christopher Jones, where we talk about Deep Space Nine all the time. And then I do have my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Well, y'all, thanks so much for joining us, and y'all come back now, you hear?